on maynard.com.au. Hey, you!
An eerie chill has settled over a glib Point Road as the drizzling rain falls outside. Many numerous cardboard detectives from the 1940s are wandering around looking for clients. But inside, I've found a man who's looking for nothing. Tim Ferguson, how are you?
I'm very well, Maynard. I love that you just said many numerous.
This place is so cool. There are records from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s and today on the walls.
This could be the first of a show that goes absolutely nowhere once again with Tim Ferguson. Bunga bunga to you.
Bunga 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 bunga.
And we just call it bunga bunga because it's the punchline of a dirty gag, and it's a party that the Italian Prime Minister used to have.
It certainly is. Welcome to our podcast. This is like where we're losing our virginity in a smooth, gentle way, but it will get faster towards the end and then stop.
What's great about it is the fact that people look at you, and you, because we're in the corner of a cafe here with a couple of losers. We've got the special guest who we will reveal in a moment. Hi, special guest.
I'm not saying anything.
Yeah, well, he'll be along a little bit later because, and let's face it, if that's the best we can do for a special guest, we're not doing it really. You know.
Well, he's clearly stated he's not saying anything.
Tim, look, I asked a few people what they would like to be part of Bunga Bunga, what should be part of Bunga Bunga, and really no one wrote back to me.
I got a few messages on Facebook, but most of those were offensive. But people did ask a couple of very interesting questions. One pertained...
Hang on, we have to open a section physically now. This is a section we love to call Crank Mail.
Crank Mail!
Crank Mail! Crank Mail! Crank Mail!
You do like the jingle, but the sound of the large horse peeing in the glass bottle at the end is very special.
Oh, it works. And here it is. That was great.
What have you got? I've got one here from someone who claims that he wants to know if being gay in Russia is now officially worse than being Russian in Russia.
Being gay in Russia is the only way you can enjoy Russia. Being Russian in Russia is difficult, but being gay and Russian in Russia, well, for starters, your chances of being a hugely famous composer have just skyrocketed. All the good ones, Rachmaninoff, Tchaikovsky... That bloke we met on that train that time.
He was hilarious. He had a little toy piano, but God, he could compose.
It was really quite amazing.
At this point, I'd like to give a shout-out to a couple of other of my favourite podcasts around the place. We'll be hearing from Richard Saunders from the Skeptic Zone podcast shortly because he's been a good friend of the Bunga Bunga people over the years. Rob Darby of the Dumb Down Atheist podcast. He's a lovely man. His podcast has turned into the S&M Atheist podcast recently, so it's gone pretty interesting. I would recommend checking out the Dumb Down Atheist podcast to find out what's going on in the atheist S&M community of Melbourne.
They're very strict.
It's okay not believing in anything, but, you know, unless you do it the right way, you're in trouble. Hilary Fairchild, could you discuss the making of the I Want to Spill the Blood of a Hippie music video? This is one that many people might not have seen because, like myself, I was there at the time and I remember you performing it live on Countdown Revolution with the Doug Anthony All-Stars. I remember you doing it live on The Big Gig. But the actual film clip that was based in a flat and looks like a mysterious sort of goings-on in a flat in inner-city Melbourne or Sydney, I've only seen once or twice. You want to describe the clip that they're talking about here?
We were very excited at the time by a stop-frame animation film clip. We thought, well, we can do something similar using that same technique. So we stood in a room for three cold, cold nights with a black curtain behind us. Me, Paul McDermott and Richard Feidler moving frame by frame by frame. Another thing we did was to play these songs very slowly and film us just dancing and, you know, mouthing the words. And then, of course, that footage was sped up. So we do look like we're being highly energetic and talkative, which we often were, but I can't explain why. A lot of the props and toys that were used in the clip came from my cellar.
Thank you very much. So my veggie burger has arrived there. You aren't offended by the lack of meat in my burger, are you, Tim?
We get some bacon for this burger, please.
We've got another question here. Why do the hot water bottles sold in Woolworths come with the instructions, do not fill with boiling water? That's a good question. I, obviously, as someone who never reads these instructions, never got that far.
Nobody thinks about the feelings of the hot water bottle. I guess they're saying don't fill it right up with boiling water. Always put a little cap of icy cold water.
And burp it.
And burp the thing. Do they seriously say that?
The good Lord.
Well, apparently this is what the claim is from Tracy Erskine. And she's cold at night.
She is cold at night and needs her hot water bottles.
Oh, here's one that you probably went into when we were on stage together at the Newcastle Writers Festival. This is Megan Dancy writes, can you go more in depth about why comedy movies need an element of tragedy and vice versa?
Aristotle pointed it out, which is why it was only 2,000 years ago. You know, it's going to take a while to catch on. The basic idea is if you're making a comedy that's not about anything that's important, then it's not really of any interest at all. Hmm. And even Zoolander, at the heart of it, ends up being about Zoolander just wanting to get a little bit of respect from his dad, who doesn't respect the fact he's a supermodel. And it's a very sad thing for Zoolander. Nobody's crying, but the audience recognises that, you know, something real is happening. And if you have a tragedy, then you want to have at least a little bit of laughter, a bit of smiling. Otherwise, you break a fundamental rule, which is you have no emotional journey. Going to see any film, you want to laugh, you want to cry, you want to get horny, and you want to have something to think about.
What about that scene in Zoolander where they're laughing and playing Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, I believe, or something like that, and they're at the petrol pump spraying petrol all over each other, and you can see the way this scene's going to go. I was agog at that scene.
It's a brilliant scene, and of course someone lights up a cigarette and boom. If you look at that, at the heart of that, a man is watching all of his friends die in a fireball. Sure, it's their own fault, which means we're allowed to laugh at it, but there's an element of sadness about seeing your friends die in a giant guff of flame.
And, of course, we're here to solve the problems of the world in Bunga Bunga. We've got a huge budget crisis in Australia at the moment, I've been told, because I actually disengaged with Australian politics sometime during the election campaign last year, Tim. Apparently someone won.
Well, I lost. Is that why you became disengaged?
Well, I did. You were standing for the Senate, and you got a couple of 1,000 votes. How many couple of 1,000 votes did you get?
Oh, I think yeah, a couple of grand of people who hate politics so much they were prepared to vote for me.
And you'll be there next time.
I will be there next time. I might actually run for real, for serious, where I might actually have a policy. My first policy, as you were saying, will be we need more F-35 aeroplanes. One for every primary school. Let the kids have a go.
Now, I want to stand up against this because have they helped find that Malaysian plane? No. Would they have helped? No. They couldn't even gone out that far and probably come back again without some sort of refueling, which the Americans would have to do for us. What about an Orion? A couple of more Orions. I know they're probably superseded, but they look good. They sound good. They're easy to say without making a mistake. You can call them the Neptune if you want to.
And they can find stuff.
Yeah, that's what their job is. They find stuff. If we found something coming to attack us, we've then got to figure out what to do about it. But at least we've found it.
Well, there's nobody coming to attack Australia. Think about it. Why would you?
Well, wouldn't the Indonesians have a go?
Oh, why would they? There was a program in the 60s and 70s in Indonesia that was trying to move people away from the main islands to the smaller islands, just to decentralise the population. And they were offered financial bribes by the government to do this. And everybody refused to go. They're perfectly happy where they are. It's a great place, Indonesia. It's a beautiful place to live. And so if you said, hey, come on, come to Wagga, you'll find a whole new world. Would you move to Wagga?
I have been there. I was there when their only nightclub was called Choices, which is a bit like saying many various.
Many various choices.
Yeah.
Choices, really?
Yep.
But, you know, I guess the government has to go through the motions of pleasing the gun-toting, you know, right-wingers and making them feel that we're armed to the teeth against enemies that don't exist and won't exist until China gets more than one aircraft carrier.
But they do have their own little stealth fighter, don't they? Already the Chinese have a stealth fighter.
Yeah, there's only one of them, but boy, it's very quiet. Nobody's seen it.
Well, that's stealthy, isn't it, really?
Oh, man, yeah, it's very stealthy.
Yes, you're listening to Crank Mail here on Bunga Bunga, the show that's going nowhere fast, Tim. In fact, I think it's the fastest show going nowhere fast in Australia.
I would put that on the pony and say, bet it all.
Well, someone who wanted to get into the Crank Mail segment was Nicole Miles, and she wants to know to whom it may concern. I think she has this imagination that we have some sort of staff, Tim.
Well, I do.
Oh, yeah, well, you do.
A bunga bunga has no staff.
No. She wants to know, it actually concerns her, she writes, that we live in a world that chickens can't cross the road without having their motives questioned. Now, I imagine Tim is someone who's into comedy here. She wants to be an advocate for chicken rights. I've got to say, you never say, why did the emu cross the road, when in fact they can be a spiteful and pecking animal at times. Chicken, not as dangerous.
Well, yeah, an emu, you would think, is asking for it. The way they look at you.
Mm.
Yep. You know, when an emu looks at you, you know you're being looked at. When a chook looks at you, you know, they're so erratic. They look at you, they look away. Thanks very much for the question, and it sparked a conversation.
Good on you, Nicole.
Good on you, Nicole. Somebody said that, in fact, there is a not hidden but very simple and obvious meaning to the joke, why did the chicken cross the road to get to the other side? And it's found in the punchline. It's about death. It's about getting to the other side.
Yeah.
It's going over to John Edwards' land. So it's actually a joke about death. Of course, it's not. But what a theory.
Could be about completion. The chicken gets to the other side, nothing happened. Is there a word for that kind of joke where nothing happening can be funny?
It is a joke type called the obvious, which I named the obvious. And it's where the expectation for more elaborate information in the punchline is defied by the simple fact. So why did it cross the road? And we're thinking, to go see its mother, to buy a hamburger. Why, to try on a new pair of shorts? And then we're just told, no, the answer is, it wanted to get to the other side to get to the other side. And this is the most true and obvious answer to that question.
Thanks for your question again, Nicole. I think that closes up the crank mail segment.
Oh, actually, there's one more joke type of that joke type, obvious joke type. A guy called Marcus Brigstoke said, I read that book, 50 Things to Do Before You Die. And I would have thought the first one was shout for help. Our brains have gone dancing off into the wilderness looking for the 50 things. I want to jump out of a plane. I want to make love to a woman, you know, whatever it might be. But of course, he just comes up with the answer that is the most true and most obvious, which is shout for help and then you won't die.
And if you want to drop us a line here at Bunga Bunga Central, a occasionally haphazard occurring show, you can drop us a line curve Tim's Facebook page, Maynard's Facebook page, Maynard Comow at Twitter, all sorts of various ways, or maynard.com.au. Just go to the website there and send us some crank mail.
Yeah, crank it up, crank it up.
And the more, and look, it can even be a difficult question that has no answer, because this show is in a minor way about philosophy, but that will all be handled by Tim, because you're at uni.
I was at uni at the bar picking up girls, but I didn't actually go to university to learn. Who does that? What moron signs themselves up to something that they could do at a library if they had any ambition or any drive all by themselves? University's really just about going, reading the books, and then proving to your teacher that you read the book and understood it. But maybe if you're smart enough, you will read the book and you will understand it.
What I like is that quote that the knowledge goes through the notes of a lecturer to the notes of the student without going through the brain of either.
That's good. You should try it with screenwriting students. Oh, my God. You know, there's no brain involved at all.
What is the motivation for them normally? Are they normally passionate, artistic people that want to write? Because normally I imagine there's a passion for screenwriting that comes first, but you're sort of saying that they're looking for a technique that's universal.
Yeah, a screenwriting student most of the time just loves TV and loves movies and was told by their mother from a very early age, oh, darling, you write such wonderful stuff. I mean, look at that. Can we put that on the fridge? It's a poem, Bernard. Bernard, she's written a poem. It's called Fleas. And you've got two rhyming words. And what happens is these people think, well, I can write. That's how I can move into the industry, as opposed to becoming, you know, a Virgo male producer, which is all about just being a half-assed accountant with a very thick mobile. So screenwriters, on the whole, were not born to write television, weren't born to write film. It's virtually a brand new practice. It is, as all people choose, the easiest option given their abilities. Well, yeah, like anything, you've got to, you know, put your shoulder behind the wheel. People say that, but surely you push hard and you go all the way over the top and then the wheel runs over you. But I understand the idea.
You've always got something to say about politics, Tim. You've always been a fighter in the field there. You've obviously felt very strongly about the tactical fighters that we're purchasing, you mentioned earlier. What really riles you up at the moment? What have you been looking at on the telly that's having you shaking your fist and your feet at the telly?
I just wish women would get their act together. When I look at the cabinet for the Australian Parliament, there is one woman. There is a minister for women, and that is a man. There is one woman in the cabinet, and that's the foreign minister. And she's, you know, doing a fine job. You know, she hasn't started any wars, and she hasn't really said the wrong thing. So why aren't there more women? Now, of course, the Prime Minister would say, well, it's all about merit. You have to earn it. That would be fine if we didn't look at all the other ministers. All those other guys, really failed solicitors, failed country meat sellers, failed tree counters from Central Australia. These guys are all there on merit. I somehow think that they're just having it too easy, and that the women in the coalition party, which is ruling the roost, actually aren't getting on their army boots and kicking the crap out of these boys. Come on, girls. Come on, sisters. What are you, for God's sake? And why do I have to go on a podcast that Maynard and I are doing free of charge to say this? Because there's no woman in the Liberal Party or the National Party who is banging their fist on a table and saying, I will shame this government if we don't have more than one woman in the cabinet. That's my rant for the day.
We're recording this on Anzac Day, and you've been to any dawn services in your life? I know I haven't. I've spoken to many veterans, I've been to many ceremonies, but never a dawn service. You ever been to one, Tim?
I went to one in Canberra when I was, you know, a teenager, and it was really a very moving occurrence. It was, I was quite surprised. I went along going, yeah, whatever. Let's go and see what's happening. And the next thing you know, there's a minute of silence where you've got to think about one simple thing, which is about people who died so that we could stand around in the middle of the morning without fear. It occurred to me, it dawned on me that this was a far more important thing than I'd thought for all my few years. It's a very moving occasion. Whether we agree with having an army that goes to other countries, whether we agree with First World War or Second World War is kind of irrelevant. The fact is that a whole bunch of men who were very young, teenage men, a lot of them, went overseas and next thing you know, found themselves in a situation that wasn't the game they were expecting. My dad was in Vietnam when the Tet Offensive occurred, which is when a whole bunch of North Vietnamese raided Saigon by surprise on the celebration of Tet. Nobody was expecting the attack. He was the guy who got the story out in the first place and, of course, saw some just awful things, battles, and he saw people strangling each other. And it was quite amazing that he survived.
Was he very forthcoming with this at all throughout his life, Tim? Did you have to ask him much about this?
Oh, we asked a couple of times, and then finally one time he said, sit down, I'm going to tell you once, and he told us a few things, but not much. Eventually, he told people like Tim Bowden, who put it into, you know, his books. He was very quiet about this stuff, as you would be. There's a reason why we moved to the bush pretty shortly after he got back. He stayed in Sydney for about 5 years and then said, no, we're getting out of here. On days like today, Anzac Day, I do think about that. And, you know, his medal is on my shelf. He got a medal for being a war correspondent. And it was, and of course, my granddad was in the First and Second World Wars. You know, Australia has bad leaders. But nonetheless, sacrifices on the field itself are all made in earnest, no matter the mistakes of the leaders. So,
look, our course has come here. I think we've got some sweet potato to eat. So away you go, Tim.
Ah, yes, come here. Come here, little potato. Oh, don't look at me like that.
Time to introduce some music here. I've been digging around the Maynard archives. And in fact, I've found a version of Ringo, one of the great spaghetti western tracks of our time, done the English version by Lorne Greene. But here's Ringo in Italian. So brush up on your Italian and away you go.
Yeah.
Muchas gracias. I think that's wrong.
I think that is wrong.
Colpito a piombo nella schiena, lo vidi steso nel deserto che respirava come un morto. Scattò brillando la mia lama e la pallottola levai e la sporca vita gli salvai a quel Ringo.
Ringo, Ringo.
Per tanto tempo l'ho curato finché un giorno mosse un dito e lo infilò nella pistolaccia e a 100 metri ti coglieva persino un acino di uvaccia. Così capii che era guarito quel dito.
Ringo, Ringo.
Un giorno poi ci dividemmo diverse strade, ci scegliemmo, io fui la legge con la stella, con il Winchester sulla spalla, e lui bandito diventò, terrore e sangue seminò quel Ringo.
Ringo, Ringo.
Lui fece un piatto con tre re, ma fatalmente il suo destino riattraversava il mio cammino, finché una sera di Blue Moon lo vidi entrare nel saloon, quel Ringo.
Ringo, Ringo.
Veloce strassi la mia Colt, lo avevo fatto tante volte, ma lui la colse proprio in pieno, rimase vuota la mia mano. Di fronte a me era spianata la sputacchiera indemoniata, la sputafuoco indemoniata. E quella fu, la gente dice, la sola volta che sorrise. Rimise a posto la pistola e mormorò qualche parola. Restiamo amici, per favore. Del buono aveva nel suo cuore quel Ringo.
Ringo, Ringo.
Per un istante mi guardò, poi scosse il capo e se ne andò. Lo rimpinzarono di piombo appena fuori, fino a quando colpito a morte stramazzò. Nessuno lacrime versò per Ringo.
Ringo.
Nel West la gente adesso dice che la mia mano fu veloce, che superò quel pistolero. Ma se passate al cimitero, nessuno sa chi ce l'ha messa la stella d'oro sulla fossa di Ringo.
Well, Bunga Bunga's rolling along here. We've got Uncle Neville having a look at us as he goes past here at the record crate. He's been very nice to us, hasn't he?
He's been fantastic. This coffee is the best coffee in Sydney.
Mm. And it's just up the road from your place too, Tim, which is handy.
It certainly is, on Glee Point Road. Mm. It's very groovy.
We've got people giggling at us over there, but they're not actually looking at us.
No, they seem to be talking to each other, but it's not like we don't know what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Lace back the mirror of coyness, whatever that means. Lace back the mirror of coyness.
Just watch out with that metaphor, Maynard.
I think I may have gotten away with it, Tim.
Yeah, just, you know, move on.
Over there, standing near the lace mirror of coyness, is Mr. Richard Saunders. Welcome.
Thank you, Maynard. I used to live on Glebe Point Road, too.
Yeah. Well, you used to work with backpackers here until the incident.
But yes, I used to work and live at Glebe Village Backpackers in this very street, yeah.
Well, you must have drank a lot of cask wine.
Yeah, the cheapest, Mount Binger, I think we call it, or something like that. We used to get it and mix it with fruit and feed them to the backpackers, yeah, in the days when you could do that.
Mm. Now, of course, Richard Saunders, the president of the Australian Skeptics, that's your correct title, isn't it, Richard?
It'll do.
You've never met Richard before, have you?
No, but we've spoken on Twitter. We're always tweeting, Richard's the only skeptic who finds any of my non-skepticism at all amusing.
You were just saying earlier that with your MS, you've always got people emailing you with suggestions from outside the box that are so far outside the box that you would never try them.
Oh, yeah, they're so far outside the box, they don't ever get put on the removal truck. People want me to ingest hawkworms, and I assume that's because they think it will somehow cure me of multiple sclerosis. But I like my multiple sclerosis. I worked hard to get it. There were years and years and years of mistreating myself.
If the hookworms were in there long enough, won't they eat through the wall of the intestine and possibly go into a an organ?
Well, hopefully they will attack each other, but I think the idea is that eventually at least you know what's killing you.
Yeah, Richard, you've heard of many miracle cures for various things. MS is just one of them, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, any disease that you have. In fact, there was a woman who wrote a book called Cure to All Diseases, and her follow-up was The Cure to All Cancers. Now, you would think that the first book would have covered the second book. She was a cancer quack by the name of Holder Clark, and she died of cancer. Her line was that all cancers are caused by the liver fluke worm or something like that. We get them all. We get all these claims coming along. And especially people with cancers or diseases or whatever will be bombarded with usually well-meaning people saying, don't trust big government, big pharma, big medicine. I've heard from the Amazon, this berry or this worm or this whatever will cure you, and it's something that they don't want you to know about. And as soon as you hear the term, this is something they don't want you to know about, you can red flag it. It's a pretty good indication that it's complete baloney.
Look, of course, you know, I like to listen to a lot of podcasts of a non-skeptical nature, or perhaps they are of a skeptical nature, you know, like No Agenda, The Higher Side Chats, Red Ice Radio, and there's people on those shows every week, and there are just some genuine conspiracies, Richard, that have happened that have had negative impacts on society.
Undoubtedly. There are secrets our government keep from us. There must be. Every government be the same. Large pharmaceutical companies have not always been ethical and have done some bad things. This is no surprise. But that does not therefore mean that this berry from the Amazon will work.
What's the latest one that's been offered to you apart from hookworms there, Mr. Tim?
One thing is don't breathe. Apparently, and Richard will be familiar with this, working with the Australian skeptics, apparently out the back of aeroplanes, you know, those jet streams way up in the air, out the back in the jet stream itself is like a drug, and the drug is primed to make us all submit.
Yeah, that'd be chemtrails you'd be talking about there.
Chemtrails, that's the thing. See, I knew it was chemtrails, but I'm feeling so submissive and just pliant that I forgot, man. It just slipped my mind.
I thought it was television that had that effect. I don't think you really had to go spraying stuff out the back of planes, Richard.
Television does that have an effect when I'm on it.
Richard, what have you got running on the latest? What's the latest campaign? Oh, look, they're making you coffee over there, Richard. They're not mucking about.
I hope it's not homeopathic coffee, that's all. We are delighted with the fact that homeopathy has yet again been bagged by the man, the big pharma, the big government has bagged homeopathy. We're continuing pressure on that. We're always continuing with our fight against the anti-vaccination brigade. But I just came across this magazine. I've been collecting this for years. Picked up this copy today here in Glebe, Nova. Oh, free magazine.
Because Glebe would be a little bit of a place where the alternative...
It is, actually. There's a bit of what we call woo happening in Glebe. But I noticed this issue has a wonderful ad here. DNA stem cell healing courses based on the fundamental principles of quantum physics. Need I say more?
So that would be using some sort of super imposition. Or so. What was that one where they swap the two things do it at either end of the universe and they swap round? Spooky action at a distance. I remember it used to be called by Einstein.
You've obviously taken the course, Maynard.
Yeah, look, I know. Look, a spooky action at any distance I'd be happy about. What do you think of spooky action at a distance, Tim?
I think the idea that the universe operates on holographic law is as silly as a hologram, really. The idea of holographic law is basically that it acts like DNA. So if we took just a tiny bit of DNA from Maynard's fingernail, conceivably, you know, in the future we'll be able to recreate a Maynard. The idea of holographic...
Well, that's just wrong to start with.
Oh, yeah, the holographic idea is that the whole universe operates in this way, apart from things like rocks. Apart from rocks, which can't reproduce themselves. But apart from rocks, apart from rocks and matter, the whole universe operates this way, man. And if you're not believing it, you're working for the man and you're breathing too many chemtrails.
Look, Richard, what are you guys running as a campaign and something we could all get involved with or something at the moment? Because I'm involved with your show, The Skeptic Zone. There's always something on that from time to time. But what's been happening?
At the moment, we're supporting a group called the Friends of Science in Medicine. And if you Google Friends of Science in Medicine, these are skeptics, Australian skeptics. We do a lot of general stuff, looking into far-fetched claims and a lot of health claims, of course. But when it comes to the crunch, when we need the PhDs and the people who really know their shit, we go to the Friends of Science and Medicine and people like that. So that's a really worthwhile site to check out, and people who deserve your support too.
There's a bit of a worry when you use people like that. Some people seem to get an aversion to them because there's that whole ivory tower thing going, oh, here comes some woman with a PhD telling me what I don't need to know. Do you get that reaction sometimes?
Well, there's the general distrust against authority. It boils down to, well, they're usually right. It's as simple as that. They are usually right. And if they're not right, then the scientific method will find that out.
You've been anti-authoritarianism in your time?
Oh, of course. But I've always had science and the army on my side. I don't screw around with that stuff. Simple fact is that, you know, you lock 100 scientists in a room, at least one of them is supposed to disagree with all the others. What skeptics, in terms of being global warming skeptics, fail to realise is that scientists were skeptics first. And scientists are skeptics every day. That's how they make their money. They look at the things that exist, the things that are working, and ask, firstly, is there a way to make it better? But underneath that, the question is, are we sure that this is all? And that is the first skepticism. Then someone comes along and says, well, I disagree with that process entirely. Well, it's like they're the second skeptics to come along. Scientists are far more skeptical. It's their job. And of course, you know my fondness for the armed forces.
Again, he's put his finger right on the chip, on the sweet potato chip, which we have in front of us.
Thanks for joining us on the first episode of Bunga Bunga. Look, I just want to mention that the music for this show came off a cassette tape that I found from the late 80s that only had samples written on the side of it. And I think it was put together by Susanna Lindsay of Adelaide, I think. So we'd like to thank her for the music she inadvertently donated to the show more than 30 years ago.
Life is like a tape of samples. You never know what you're going to get.
Let's get grooving now with some of the Buddy Rich Big Band. This is from the Buddy Rich Big Band Live, and it's a great vocal from Buddy Rich's daughter, who at the age of 12 sang this in front of the big band. And I'll play Buddy's intro there, in which she says that she's 12-year-old and she's drunk.
Gone are the days, Maynard, gone are the days.
Society has progressed from 1969, when this recording of The Beat Goes On was made.
My daughter's going to die. She's going to get up and sing The Beat Goes On. And this is her first time in front of an audience. Number one, she's 12 and a half years old, and she's drunk. Immediately, that makes it kind of tough. This is our daughter, Kathy, ladies and gentlemen. Come on, come on, come on. Yay! Now, you all right? You gonna do it? Beautiful.
Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La-di-da-di-dee, la-di-da-di-da. Charleston was once the rage, uh-huh. History has banned that stage, uh-huh. The mini skirts, the current thing, uh-huh. Teeny bopper is our newborn king, uh-huh. And the beat goes on, the beat goes on. Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La-di-da-di-dee, la-di-da-di-da. Grocery stores a supermarket. Keep on marching off to war. Electrically they keep their baseball score. And the beat goes on. The beat goes on. Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the
Tim, I've also been into the archives too, and I saw a tape that just had DAAS written on the side of it, and I had an idea it probably wasn't that horrible band from the 90s or the 80s of the same name. It was you guys, and this is a raw tape of me interviewing you, possibly in your hotel room, possibly in my hotel room, possibly in neither of our hotel rooms, but some room in Edinburgh, and you're getting very excited over Dennis Leary and a few other things.
I was a big fan of Mr. Leary. He was a guy with a comedy show after my own heart, which was just designed to annoy a specific group of people. Some people are just sort of, you know, blasé about who they offend. I very much loved the way he just picked one group of people to drive completely mad.
And it's a show he specially wrote because he flew to England with his wife, and his wife was pregnant at the time, wasn't able to return. They had to wait for the baby to be born. So he had all this time in London where he was able to work on this show and work it up for the Edinburgh Festival.
Yeah, so he had time to work out, you know, what makes the English laugh. Which is why, you know, if you're going to do comedy in America, there is a pattern and a rhythm that just tends to work best for Americans.
Would you recommend to now have a look back at No Cure for Cancer, his show, or do you think it's dated a bit?
Oh, it's always going to still be offensive to that narrow bandwidth of prudes.
Mm. It's a song that Arsehole came from.
Oh, yeah, and what a great song. So just summing it all up. And, you know, the funny thing was, it was hot. So the question, how about this heat, really seemed salient.
And do you remember much else of the 1990 season of the Doug Anthony All-Stars at the Edinburgh Festival? Or was it all sort of blur a bit? Because you were there every year for about 8 years.
One thing I learned from all Edinburgh festivals, and watch out if you're going, particularly if you're a woman, is that Edinburgh makes a lot of Guinness and sells a lot of Guinness. So tourists like Australians turn them and go, I'll have a Guinness, and I'll have another one, and I'll have another one, and I'll have more tomorrow. This seems fine, but what you'll find is the first week of the Edinburgh Festival...
Just run that back. There was a real... See, what Tim did then was a great comedy segue. He said, this seems fun, and then continued on, which puts the idea in your head that something's coming up that isn't fun, but in fact maybe hilarious.
Well, in fact, it's sort of a tragedy. What happens is in week one, everybody drinks a lot of Guinness and they make a whole lot of love with a whole lot of people. In the second week, it lasts about 2-3 days and a new influx of people come in, but already the people there in the first week are starting to get a little bit scratchy. And the reason is because the ladies are actually getting a little bit scratchy. With that much yeast from the Guinness going into a woman's system, you'll find that it's thrush, I think. A woman will get thrush. So mid-second week...
Has this been double-blind tested, Tim, or is this just some hearsay you're throwing out there?
Well, we were blind drunk, and it certainly seemed that all of a sudden women just kind of weren't in the mood, and everybody was complaining of having thrush. So you'll find by the end of the festival, everybody's annoyed and very grumpy, and the guys are just drinking a lot of Guinness.
So your advice is get in often and get in early.
Get in often, get in early, and just drink wine or bourbon or just beer. But that Guinness stuff, you watch. You'll get all scratchy and itchy, ladies.
We'll certainly get some crank mail about that.
Well, let's hope so.
And on that note, I think we should go out to see what was going on in between the itching and the scratching with Tim Ferguson. And what should we throw on the end? Should we throw in something from Mr. Leary at the end of the show?
Yeah, Asshole would be good.
Yeah. Just to remind you that it was the number one song on the Triple J Hot 100 that year. I remember bringing it back from the US when I was over there and bringing it back. I mean, in no other country in the world that it actually achieved this level of popularity as it did here. I mean, it was always an underground song in the US, but not here.
Always put an asshole at the back.
This is a journey into sound.
Okay, Tim, while you're making me a cup of tea, why have you been to Edinburgh so many times when no one out of sight of Europe ever seems to know the festival goes on here?
Well, it's interesting, I guess...
It's a fairly cult thing to do, really, isn't it?
It certainly is.
It's not something a successful group would try and do.
Hey, look, slow down, Maynard. It's a bit early in the morning. Well, I suppose not. No, it's not the sort of thing that anybody would want to do. There seem to be 1,200 acts come up every year to the festival for no particular reason apart from to throw money away and get drunk. It's the only reason we turn up.
Apart from yourselves, what act have you enjoyed this year? What has been the act for Tim?
Well, I really liked Jerry Sadowitz's magic. I think he's a very gifted comedian and an even better magician. A guy called Dennis Leary was very funny. He's an American comic who's actually really offensive. Not like in the Sam Kinison way where he just sort of talks about racial minorities, but Dennis actually talks about cancer and things like that in a bitterly, thoroughly offensive way, and I really admire that, especially for an American. It's a little difficult for Americans to shock people.
And of course, what's been the bomb of the festival? You've been to see something you've held your nose and gone...
Yes, well, Mary of the Three Estates, which of course is in the main fest, was a total bloody disaster. 300 people prancing around with Scottish accents. When are the Scots going to realise they are not welcome at the Edinburgh Festival? That it's better that they all just clear out and charge a hell of a lot of rent for everybody else who does want to be here.
Okay, Tim, any special tips on making tea?
Well, the first one is get the pot, get the tea, get the water, pray. I usually, before I make a cup of tea, usually donate it to Buddha or Krishna. Not because of any religious thing, it just makes me feel better. And just in case Buddha is a retributionist bastard, I figure I might as well get in early.
Now, we travel through the house. Now, it's a fairly unmarked house, one in which they have no fear of losing the bond at this present moment. God, Paul seemed to be finishing up the ironing. How's it going?
It's good. I've just got about 300 more pairs of jockey shorts to get through for the Lothian Road Borders Police because of a slight discrepancy we had with them last week over a parking fine, and then I'll be back on the road to ill health.
I was going to be kind of surprised at seeing you iron, because from seeing you on stage, I'm going to imagine you never iron.
No, I love ironing. It's one of the domestic chores that I really revel in. That and dishwashing. I find dishwashing just absolutely splendid. Also, picking bits of lint off any household carpet is one of my pastimes.
And if people wanted to bring a couple of baskets along to the show, you wouldn't say no?
I would weave them right then and there.
Well, I've looked completely around the flat, and as far as I can tell, Richard's nowhere around. But Tim and Paul are here. They're about to rush off to dinner, then do a show. It's been great meeting you while you've been here in Edinburgh. It's been great meeting me.
It's been really interesting meeting you, Maynard, at this time of the morning.
Every time meeting you is always like the first time.
I felt terrible.
Look, any special messages for people waiting for you in Australia to return? When will you be back in Australia?
We'll be coming back as quickly as we possibly can. We've got a second series of Das Kapital coming up, of course. It's been sold to the BBC and LWT, Channel 4, Channel 1, BBC 1 and BBC 2 over here. So it's been very exciting for us.
In America, it's been sold to Channels 1 through to 75, HBO, Special Classics, Comedy on 5 and what's the other one called?
Ha ha! Ha ha, yes indeed. So that's very exciting. All we'd like to say to the people at home
You don't miss them, do you? You've forgotten who they are.
Who are they?
The people
Australia. Beautiful Australia. Sunny Australia. Yes, we do. We miss you terribly.
Get your act together and make Paul Keating Prime Minister, if only for the photographs.
Okay, could you sing a song for us, please? Sing a song.
Way down south they have a name for wind and rain and fire. The fire is Joe.
The rain is Bess.
And they call the wind the wind.
Thank you, Doug Anthony. See you next year.
Yay.
Bye.
Bye, Maynard.
Oh, Christ.
There's so much phlegm in my throat at the moment. It's like an oyster farm in there.
Folks, I'd like to sing a song about the American dream. About me. About you. About the way our American hearts beat way down in the bottom of our chests. About that special feeling we get in the cockles of our hearts. Maybe below the cockles. Maybe in the subcockle area. Maybe in the liver. Maybe in the kidneys. Maybe even in the colon. We don't know. I'm just a regular Joe with a regular job. I'm your average white suburbanite slob. I like football and porno and books about war. I got an average house with a nice hardwood floor. My wife and my job, my kids and my car. My feet on my table and a Cuban cigar. Sometimes that just ain't enough to keep a man like me interested.
Oh, no.
No way. No, I've got to go out and have fun at someone else's expense.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I drive really slow in the ultra-fast lane while people behind me are going insane. Toilets and I piss on the seat. I walk around in the summertime saying, how about this heat? I'm an ecto, yo, 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 yo. I'm an ecto, yo, yo, yo. Sometimes I park in handicapped spaces while handicapped people make handicapped
be singing this song, ranting and raving and carrying on. Maybe they're right when they tell me I'm wrong. Of a 1967 Cadillac Eldorado convertible, hot pink with whale skin hubcaps and all leather cow interior and big brown baby seal eyes for headlights. Yeah! And I'm gonna drive around in that baby at 115 miles per hour, getting 1 mile per gallon, sucking down quarter pounder cheeseburgers from McDonald's in the old-fashioned non-biodegradable styrofoam containers. And when I'm done sucking down those greaseball burgers, I'm gonna wipe my mouth with the American flag, and then I'm gonna toss the styrofoam containers right out the side, and there ain't a goddamn thing anybody can do about it. You know why? Because we got the bomb, that's why. Two words, nuclear fucking weapons, okay? Russia, Germany, Romania, they can have all the democracy they want. They can have a big democracy cakewalk right through the middle of Tiananmen Square, and it won't make a lick of difference because we got the bombs, okay? John Wayne's not dead. He's frozen. And as soon as we find a cure for cancer, we're gonna thaw out the Duke, and he's gonna be pretty pissed off. You know why? Have you ever taken a cold shower? We'll multiply that by 15 million times. That's how pissed off the Duke's gonna be. I'm gonna get the Duke and John Cassavetes and Lee Marvin and Sam Peckinpah and a case of whiskey and drive down to Texas.
You know, you really are an asshole.
Why don't you just shut up and sing the song, pal? I'm an asshole. Yo, 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 yo. I'm an asshole. A S S H O L E. Everybody, A S S H O L E. And I'm proud of it.
On maynard.com.au. Hey, you!